Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, best-selling author of the book, The Fitness Mindset and Rewire Your Mindset, here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness, and mindset. Wow, do we have an absolute belter for today. I've mentioned on previous podcasts that when I first started back in 2016 with this podcast, that I had a list of people who were like my dream interviewees, people that I would cross my fingers and hope that someday it would work out that I could get them on the podcast. And today, thankfully, I'm so honored to bring one of those guests. That man is Dorian Yates. Some of you, particularly people that are fans or have been fans of bodybuilding or have any knowledge of bodybuilding at all, will be familiar with the man that I'm speaking to today, Dorian Yates. Dorian Yates, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Ronnie Coleman, they're all names that kind of get thrown into the bodybuilding hat with the greatest of all time. And although I am a fan of bodybuilding and have been a massive fan of Dorian for years, as somebody that has a bodybuilding background, this isn't necessarily the type of episode that you think it's going to be, and you might get that from the title in today's episode. And just to give a little bit of backstory, for those of you who are unfamiliar with Dorian, he is one of the greatest ever bodybuilders to have lived. He won the Mr. Olympia competition 6 times, which is the Mr. Olympia, for those unfamiliar with it, is the mecca and the crown jewel of bodybuilding competitions. It's the best. If you are a crown Mr. Olympia, you are the best bodybuilder in the world. And Dorian is seen as one of the greatest of all time. But in today's episode, we go in a slightly different direction talking about things. Now, we definitely speak about bodybuilding, his major training philosophies to win this Mr. Olympia 6 times, the underdog mindset to get to the top of the mountain, steroids in bodybuilding, and why it's very important for the average trainer to realize that what he did in the past and what other bodybuilders do isn't what you should do for growth, and that overtraining is a real thing, under recovery is a real thing, and that progress in training isn't a linear journey, that sometimes you have to back off taking rest days or taking rest weeks in order to actually move forward. But that's only about half of today's episode, because the second half, we go heavy into the mindset. We go deep into the mindset. And one of the things that I acknowledge with Dorian at the very end of today's episode is I followed his journey all the way through, from a teenager that was a massive fan when I started bodybuilding first, to somebody that gets an unbelievable amount of mindset growth from following his content now, because he has gone from that extreme personality type of tunnel vision, bodybuilding, fitness, or whatever goal he had, to looking into himself and reflecting into himself to try and find more balance so that he can use his extreme personality to benefit himself when he's doing a business venture, but it doesn't lead to this constant state of mental health issues and anxiety. And he speaks a lot on his channels and other podcasts or anything that I've listened to with Dorian in the past about some of his experiences over the last few years and how it's completely shifted his mindset. And he's done that in the form of meditation and psychedelics. So psychedelics isn't something that I've talked about on this podcast in the past, but this is probably the best person in my mind to speak to on the topic because of the nature of this podcast and the nature of, personally, from a selfish standpoint, as somebody that has that extreme personality type and seeing how somebody can plug in meditation or psychedelics potentially and get that earth-shattering paradigm shift where you can see that your body is out of balance or that your life is out of balance. And Dorian goes into that in a lot of detail in today's episode. So we talk about his psychedelic journeys. We talk about some of the ayahuasca retreats he's had in Costa Rica. And then we jump back and forth to some of the shifts and changes he's made in his lifestyle, his nutrition, and his training as a result of some of these experiences. So his shift in nutrition in particular to a mostly plant-based diet is off the back of some of these experiences that he's had. And the philosophy and lifestyle changes that he's made are based on these meditative practices that he's had and those previous ayahuasca / mushroom / other psychedelic experiences. So this is an awesome episode. I absolutely love this. As somebody that could probably just listen to Dorian talk about bicep curls for an hour, I would fangirl on this podcast anyway. But because of the nature of the amount of people that listen to this podcast and what I know you're interested in terms of the mindset side, the health side, the fitness side, today's guest is just an absolute belter. As somebody that's gone from the top of the mountain, literally being the very best and seen in many people's eyes as the best bodybuilder to ever have lived, into a more of a spiritual fitness health standpoint or health philosophy and promoting that message on his channels. So without further ado, here is today's guest with the one and only, the legendary Dorian Yates on bodybuilding, psychedelics, and the underdog mindset. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast, and I am delighted to be joined today with my guest, Dorian Yates. Dorian is a legendary 6 times Mr. Olympia champion. He revolutionized bodybuilding by setting new standards in body mass and conditioning, and he was the first Mr. Olympia at 250 pounds, presenting an absolutely shredded physique with extremely low body fat and outstandingly high muscle density. Dorian has an unrivaled approach to his training and methodology with the renowned no bullshit approach. He is also the founder of DY Nutrition, one of the world's leading supplement companies, and his new online coaching platform, which will be available in the coming months, Dorian Yates Academy, helps support clients all over the world and will support clients all over the world to help hit their fitness goals. I'm so excited today to talk all things bodybuilding, mindset, and fitness, health, and wellness in general on today's podcast. Dorian, such an honor for me. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Brian. How you doing, man? Thanks for having me on and letting me speak to your audience.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine. Dorian, I'm going to take it right back to the beginning just to kind of get us kicked off. I know you grew up on a farm and moved to Birmingham when you were about 13, but can you tell us a little bit about what got you into the world of fitness and then bodybuilding in general?
Okay, so I was brought up on a farm. It was a small holding. We had some horses. My mom was a horse riding instructor and very keen equestrian. So we had some horses. We had some ducks and chickens and dogs and stuff like that in a few fields. And I remember my childhood being naturally very physical because that's just how it was then. We used to walk everywhere or ride the bike. And as it was kind of rural area, it's not like your mate lives next door, you know, he lives a mile away and school's a long walk. And so I was always a physical kid, and I got fascinated with Bruce Lee and Kung Fu and all that when it first came out, when I was around that age, I suppose. And later on, when I moved to Birmingham, the first sport I did was I couldn't find Kung Fu, so I was doing karate. And a friend of mine, he had some weights that I think he commandeered for the local sports center in his house. So we were doing a bit of weights there. And so I got introduced to the weights, and I actually felt like I liked the challenge of pushing myself and lifting the weights probably more than the karate, because we were doing a lot of katas and more formal stuff. And I liked the physical stuff. I like really pushing myself to exhaustion. So that was my last year at school. I started doing some weight training and getting into it. And I actually bought some of Joe Weider's magazines, and I saw Robbie Robinson, and I think I may have saw Mike Mensah. When I left school at 16, my mom decided to go back. She wanted to move back to the, you know, rural environment, and I didn't at that point. I was in the city, so I stayed there. But I didn't really have anywhere to stay. I didn't have a kind of stable lifestyle. So the gym was kind of put on the back burner for a few years, and I was just kind of hanging out and having fun with my friends. And then one day, there was a social unrest in Birmingham. There was a lot of riots going on, and places were on fire, shops were getting raided and stuff. But we weren't involved in any of that. Actually, we were just kind of like walking through the city center one night, going to a party. And one friend I was with, he decided it'd be fun to kind of take some clothes off the mannequins that were hanging out the shop windows, because all the windows were broken. And, you know, we were a bit drunk. So he decided to pull this mannequin, and all the glass came out. Anyway, we got arrested and we got charged with being part of this social unrest. We were just really a couple of drunk kids in the wrong place at the wrong time. But we got sent to detention center. And when I was in there, it was quite physical. We did circuit training, and they had weights in there as well. So I was doing the circuit training, I was doing weights. And I realized that kind of, you know, I had a better physique than everybody. I was bashing through this circuit, training faster than everybody. And because of that, I got treated differently. And I also realized, hey, man, like, you got something here, you know? You got something here you can work with. And you're here in a detention center. And one of these guys in here, they're going to go on to probably be in jail later on. And this is just the life that's ahead of them. But that's not the life that's ahead for you, because you got something here that you can be good at. I didn't know how good I could be. I just knew it was something very positive, and I needed to put my energy into this when I could. So when I left the detention center, it took me some time to get a job, to get an apartment, to get some stability in my life where I could pursue something like that. So, yeah, I started training around 21, but at that point, I already knew a lot about training. I've done a lot of reading, done a lot of preparation and so on these years when I wasn't able to train, but I still maintained an interest. So I started at 21 with already, you know, a decent physique, I guess, for somebody that didn't train much, and a good amount of knowledge. So I didn't really waste any time too much at the start. And I started just for the purpose of, I want to compete and I want to win a competitions, and that is going to lead to something positive. So pretty much that was my starting point when I was 21, where I said, right, I'm going to do bodybuilding, I'm going to compete, and I'm going to give absolutely everything I've got to this. And that's what I did.
And you won the British Championships at, I think it was 24 was when you first won the British Championships.
Yeah, well, my competitive history, actually, I did a contest after I'd been in the gym for about, I think I'd been there for about 8 months, and the gym owner was organizing Mr. Birmingham with the various gyms in Birmingham at that time. It was 1984. So he said, why don't you go in the novice category, because you look great. And I'm like, I don't know. And anyway, I went in. I think I dieted for a week or something like that. I went in and I won this contest after such a short time. So that was the first one. Second one was in 1983 when I did my debut in the IFBB, or the EFBB it was called at the time. And I went into the novice contest in the EFBB. Like, the officials and the judges from the federation, they were just blown away. I mean, I didn't realize, now I look back at the pictures, I can see what they saw, but they're like, who the hell are you? And what are you doing in a novice contest? You should be in a heavyweight. You look incredible. I'm like, well, I don't know. It's my first contest, so I went in the novice, didn't think I was good enough for the heavyweights. And they're more or less like laughing, like, you know, you don't think you're good enough for the heavyweights. Well, let me tell you something. You're probably the best heavyweight we've got in the whole country. And it was a bit hard for me to accept that at first, but so they invited me then to compete in the World Games, which is a week later, as a heavyweight. So I went from a novice competition one weekend to competing in the World Games, which is a world championship, the following weekend, and getting seventh place out of 13 competitors. But these are really seasoned guys that have been training for many years. So it was a good result at that time, although I didn't enjoy losing. So I swear I would never go into a contest again unless I thought I was ready and had a chance to win it. So that was 85. That was my introduction to competitive bodybuilding, really. And 86, I won the British Championship heavyweight category.
When you, and again, I'm going to kind of, as a bodybuilding fan and someone that is a health and fitness fan, but I followed your career very closely, like as a teenager, especially when I started getting into bodybuilding first. I'm curious, did your mindset approach to shows change over the years from, say, the 86 British Championships to the Olympias, or was your mindset always the same going into every show from the beginning until you finished?
Well, it was somewhat different in that I always got a lot of strength coming from the place of being an underdog. So I was this kid that, my father died young. My mom left when I was 16. So I was on my own, fending for myself. When I was competing in the British Championship, winning the British Championship. So I'm British champion now, best bodybuilder, heavyweight bodybuilder in Britain. But I had a one-bedroom flat on a council estate with very little furniture. No car, no money. So I always came from a point of underdog. Even after the 86 British Championship, somebody backed me to open the gym, which was Temple Gym in Birmingham. because I don't have money to do it. So fortunately, somebody backed me and we made a deal with that. So I started earning money then, and I was able to get a car. You know, all my friends had a car, but to be honest, I didn't really care because I was pursuing this goal, this dream that was all encompassing. And so I didn't mind at that point. So 86, I started earning some money, but I always felt like I was the underdog because I was from England and people said, oh, you can't do it. You can't go to America and beat all the Americans. And, you know, they got better gyms and better food and, you know, somehow they're supposed to be bigger than us or whatever, all this, you know, at that point, all bodybuilding really was kind of centered in the States. So that's a mythical status. So I was always like, screw you, I'm going to show you. That was the energy that I used all the way through until, I guess, really until I got second to Lee Haney in the Mr. Olympia. And he retired. And then the next year, the title was open. And logically, I would be the favorite, being as I was second the year before. So then I kind of lost that. You know, I was no longer the underdog, which was actually a little bit disconcerting for a while because I was so used to that feeling. And now it wasn't there. So I'm like, wow, I don't have the underdog. And now I'm the favorite. And so, wow, could it really be me? I could win this and I could be the best in the world. And, you know, I had a little chat with myself. And I was like, listen, man. Why not? Somebody's got to win it, right? And you know deep in your heart that nobody has given as much to this as you, as far as total dedication to every aspect of this thing and almost putting everything else on your life in hold. Wouldn't be possible to give any more. So you bloody deserve it, mate. So there was a switch in attitude there that I had to do. And, of course, then that was my first win. And then, you know, you're the champion, you're the winner, and everyone's after you. So then it's a different kind of motivation. The motivation was then, okay, I'm the champion now, but I want to stay the champion. But not only that, I don't want to just play safe here and just, you know, be the champion and earn as much money as you can, which is what the advice a lot of people gave me. I was like, no, I want to see how far I can take this, how good I can be. So that became then more of a motivating factor than just winning the contest. And with the risk of sounding arrogant, which I don't think I am, I didn't ever go to a Mr. Olympia with even one iota of doubt. Or maybe the last one because I was injured and I wasn't able to train properly. So that was, you know, doubt starts coming in then. But up until that point, I felt very confident every time.
I love that transition from underdog to somebody has to win it to keeping that fire lit all the way through. You have an incredible resource on Amazon Kindle and Apple Books. It's the Dorian Yates Training Journal 1985 to 1990. They're your actual handwritten notes from each day of training to becoming the six-time Mr. Olympia. But I'm curious, what training principles did you follow religiously during that time?
Well, I was introduced to Arthur Jones and Mike Mentzer and the high intensity training principles. And being as I'm kind of a logical thinker, it really appealed to me. It seemed logical. It seemed to have some kind of science behind it, if you like. And not only that, my feedback was, so what I did, I meticulously kept notes. I wrote down every single workout that I ever did, and I made notes and records of how my strength was going and measurements and weights and every little bit of feedback I could get to analyze what's going on and whether if I change something, you know, I would change small things at a time and see if that was beneficial or not beneficial. And I noticed very quickly that if I trained more often, or if I did more work, more volume over a certain level, then my progress would really slow down or just come to a screeching halt. And then, okay, then I would take a few days off to rest, and then I would go back to a more abbreviated routine, and I would start progressing and growing again. So, you know, the theory was there that the intensity of training is the most important thing, and that you need to do very short bursts in order to train very intensely and to recover, and rest and recovery is very important. So I had the theory there, but then I had the practical experience of this actually happening. Well, look, you know, I do more sets, I do more exercises, or I train more often, and boom, everything comes to a halt. I take a rest, I go back on a lesser routine as far as volume, and I start growing again. So the theory was there, and then the practical feedback was there. So that's all I needed.
And I love the way that you've documented it all in that journal. I highly recommend people to even just download that to see the process of meticulously writing everything down in order to hit an end goal. I think that alone is just so valuable. And it also shows the training, you know, progress isn't linear, that you have to back off sometimes to actually move forward.
Yeah, that's what I found. I mean, I try to, like, and let's throw it out there because it is a fact, right? You know, we all know that steroids are used in competitive bodybuilding. But you have to keep in mind when you're reading about a lot of these guys and their routines and so on, that the anabolics will help you and enhance your recovery. So maybe if you're not using anabolics, which a lot of people are not, then you're not going to be able to train 6 days a week like some of the professionals do and still be able to recover. I was training 3 times a week in my first couple of years in the gym, and making great progress. If I tried to train 4 or 5 times a week, then it really came to a halt. And being gung-ho and young, I was just, you know, pushing every workout. And I also noticed after about 6 weeks of going and pushing and getting stronger and going up, I'd hit a plateau, and quite often I'd get sick. I mean, I'd get a cold or something like that, because your immune system starts getting run down now because, you know, you're not recovering properly. So after a while, I pretty much built in a bit of a cycle. After 5 or 6 weeks of all out high intensity training and trying to, like, better myself each workout as far as doing a rep or a little bit more weight or something, I would then take a couple of weeks of training lighter and sometimes taking a whole week off from the gym. And I tell this to people all the time, they're not making progress. All right, well, let's take a look at what you're doing. And first piece of advice I got for you is take a week off. Take a week off and go back and start again with a little bit less volume and a bit more focus, a bit more intensity. And they're like, wow, I can't believe I took a week off and I come back and I'm stronger. I'm like, well, I'm not surprised, because obviously you were overtrained and then you took the week off and you fully recovered. And so your strength has gone up. So less is more. In terms of volume for building muscle mass.
You have switched to a little bit more of a functional style training now. What does your kind of current training regimen look like? I know with lockdown and COVID, et cetera, it's a little bit different, but just in a general last few years.
I was continuing to do bodybuilding type training, I suppose, as much as I could. But I had various injuries. The one that really bothers me is I've torn a supraspinatus rotator on the left shoulder. Also on that left side, I had a torn tricep when I was competing, and a torn bicep. So now that whole side is really kind of very weak. I can't do a lot with it as far as pushing for chest or overhead pushing. I really can't do any of that. That's very, very light dumbbell flies or something like that. And this was slowly kind of, you know, I'm trying to work around this and trying to do my bodybuilding training because I enjoy it and that's what I've always done and that's where I'm comfortable. But I could notice slowly that this was, you know, a year ago I could do this exercise, the next, now I can't do this one, and now I can't. It was getting kind of more and more restricted. It was a bit tight around the hips and the lower back. And I decided to start doing yoga to give me more flexibility, more mobility. My flexibility was okay in some areas because I always did some stretching, but mobility was terrible, balance was terrible. So those are the things that I could work on and I could improve. And I'm kind of like, okay, Dorian, why are you doing this training, bodybuilding training now? Because it's not really benefiting you. And why do you need to try to maintain a certain level of muscle mass? Is that for your own benefit, or is that for your ego, or is that because you're Dorian Yates and you're 6 times Mr. Olympia and you feel that people expect that from you? And so I asked myself all those questions, and I'm like, well, you know, I got to live my life the way I want to live it and not what anyone else wants. So I'm going to change my training, and I'm going to change my diet, because what I need now is a healthy, functional body that's going to serve me well as I get older. And trying to train for muscle mass with exercises that are kind of irritating your existing injuries and muscle mass that is no use to you, you're not competing anymore. So I pretty much, for a while, I kind of moved away from weight training. I was just doing biking and yoga and some functional training. I do a little bit of weights now, but it's limited to what I can do. I mean, I was training legs really heavy until a few years ago, but I couldn't train the upper body. So none of it was making sense. So I'm like, I'm going to train for what I need right now in my life. My diet's going to be for what I need and what I think is the best for my health. And the muscle mass is no longer really a concern for me. So that's the kind of transition I went through. So my diet is different. My training is different. Everything is different now, because it's what I need and what's going to benefit me. That's the way I look at it.
One of the things I love most about you, Dorian, is your kind of documentation of going from bodybuilder to into that health and wellness. And you see, you're super reflective. That's one of the things that I, from any podcast that I've ever listened to you on, any interviews that you've done, you're super reflective. You even mentioned it there on, well, you know, why am I doing this weight training? Is it this what people expect of me because I'm a multi-time Mr. Olympia? Have you always been very reflective, or is that something that you learned?
But I think it's got more because I've got more conscious, you know, various experiences I've been through. People listen to previous podcasts that I've been, had experience with different psychedelics. I've been practicing meditation now for probably, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years really regularly. So I'm constantly kind of, I think I'm a thinker. Sometimes I think too much to my detriment. It's almost, you know, can wear myself out with it. But I'm always kind of thinking and analyzing and trying to be conscious about myself and why I think the way I do, why I act the way I do, and what motivates me. It's kind of a self-analysis that I think a lot of time we don't do, because we're just caught up in doing what we're doing and kind of get automated and not really realizing. I think about meditation is very beneficial for that, because it kind of almost slows down, if this is a way to say it, it almost slows down your thoughts so that you kind of recognize them. So it's easier when you have negative thoughts that are coming in, that you can recognize that they're coming in and kind of block them at the door. You know, when I used to work on the door many years ago, first bit of advice I got when I started working there was like, look, if you see somebody coming up that thinks going to be a, could give you a problem inside the club, stop them at the door, right? Because it's much easier to stop them at the door than to get them out once they're inside. So, you know, it's kind of same thing with negative thoughts and reactions to those thoughts. If you can recognize them, then you're not going to react, because you can analyze it.
I love that analogy. I'm curious, with psychedelics and meditations and a kind of a chicken and egg thing, in your case, was it you were meditating and that's what wanted you to expand into psychedelics, or did you have a psychedelics experience and that led you down the road to meditation?
My psychedelic experience would be first. I've been a user of cannabis and a believer in the benefits of cannabis way, 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 way long before it got recognized by the mainstream, which now, you know, a lot of people are familiar with CBD and different cannabis medicines. Now it's legal in many states in the US and so on. So that was, you know, probably on and off since I was a teenager. Very kind of cut it out when I was bodybuilding, because I didn't really know the benefits then. I thought it was just, you know, like drinking and so on, it's not good, so I'm cutting it out. Later on, I kind of learned all the benefits. So I've been a cannabis user regularly for probably 20 years now. So that kind of changes the way you think. And I had a couple of experiences with mushrooms, and had an experience in Brazil when I met my wife out there. about 11 years ago with ayahuasca, but that was, but later on I found that was really kind of wrong and dangerous the way I did it. And then I was introduced later on to DMT and so on. So I think the psychedelics actually came first, and I started meditating after that. It was, the psychedelics was kind of like a bang, like a mind-opening event, and everything kind of came from there. In fact, I really believe one DMT experience I had, I came out of that and like, all right, I need to do yoga. My body's all screwed up. It's all tight. It's not moving properly. I just had this whole, you know, whole download. And that's when I started doing yoga after that experience. And now, now I actually headline a camp in Costa Rica once or twice a year, where a beautiful facility down there called Soltara. And I do a group ayahuasca week down there. I've done three camps now, and the experiences and the change, positive changes that people have made from these camps is really tremendous.
What's the name of those camps, Dorian? I'll definitely link those in the show notes, because I know there is definitely a subsection of listeners who are very interested. And again, everyone, do your due diligence, look into, you know, anything that you're going to think about consuming yourself. But what's the name of that camp, Dorian?
Just it's, to put the show notes. It's called Soltara. If you're on the internet, it's soltara.co. And it's an amazing facility, very professional team in a beautiful setting in the jungles on the beach in Costa Rica. And a lot of people have been asking me over the years since I spoke about it, like where to do this. And previously I would never recommend anywhere, because there was no way, you know, that I felt would really, you know, ticked all the boxes as far as the care and the professionalism and stuff like that. And Soltara approached me, and I spoke with them, and I went to the facility, and yeah, they're very amazing. So if you want to go on their website and have a look, you can read all about it, a lot of information on there. My next camp, well, everything's up in the air at the moment. It's, you know, nobody really knows when everything's getting back to normal, or if it is. But we're scheduled in November, so that's when I'm down there. I was, we were down there in November. Actually, I took my son with me. So I've been there with my son. I've been there with my wife. I'll possibly take my daughter in the future. She's interested in going. And pretty much everybody that goes there, they're just like, this is the most amazing and helpful experience I've had in my life. You know, it's very hard to describe. But somebody once told me, kind of summed it up. They're like, man, I've been going to therapy, and this 1 week here is like more valuable than a lifetime of therapy.
I've had a very similar feedback from several friends who've told me the same thing. And that's why thank you so much for sharing that, because I know there's a lot of people that are be very curious and will definitely check that out at the end of this podcast.
Actually, the group, you know, I mean, they just get to hang out with me during the day, and then we have meetings and discussions and group sharing sessions. But when it comes to the actual administration of the ayahuasca and the control of the ceremonies and all this kind of stuff, that's really nothing to do with me. I'm a layman compared to these people. You got shamans that go through, you know, decades of training that carry this out, and some great facilitating staff there that kind of guide people through this and use their experience to help people with all the issues and questions that come up. So it's really a great place.
I love that. And I know on top of psychedelics, because I follow a lot of your stuff and listen to any podcast you're on personally, just as a fan, and I know you're a big Bob Marley fan as well, but alongside psychedelics, Bob Marley, etc., is there anything else out there that you're passionate about that we might not necessarily associate with you?
Well, maybe. I mean, I love animals. I grew up on this farm setting, and a lot of time I was there alone because, as I said, it's not like I had a friends live next door or something. So I spend a lot of time with animals, and I've got a real affinity with animals. So in Marbella, I work with the dog shelter, and I just started horse riding again, which I used to do as a kid. So Also, I've been to Africa a few times on safari. I've been actually trekking to see the mountain gorillas a couple of times there, which is amazing, kind of once in a lifetime experience that I've done twice now. So I'm a real animal lover, which is maybe something people didn't realize or didn't know.
No, I didn't. I wasn't aware of that either. I'm going to double back, Dorian, on may not necessarily be a training or diet. It could be any area that you want to kind of cover on this. But what's been the biggest mindset shift that you have today versus, say, the height of your bodybuilding career? Or what have you changed your mind about most in recent years? Be it training, nutrition, mindset in general, lifestyle based. What's the biggest change or mindset shift you've had over the last few years? That, for example, if you were to meet, the Dorian of the 80s, you're like, we have
Yeah.
completely different thought processes now. What would one of those examples be?
Well, now it's, I believe that I'm trying to get everything into balance. So, what I did with bodybuilding, in any case, is an extreme pursuit. But my approach was way more extreme than anyone else that was doing it. So, it's almost like every ounce of my energy and focus and vision went into that, which is, I achieved my goal, but it's not really a healthy mindset to be in for too long. And by the time I was getting to my sixth Mr. Olympia, and I had a very serious injury going into that, and that kind of forced my hand into retiring. And the last Mr. Olympia, I wasn't in the shape that I wanted to be. Yeah, that was a very extreme focus, tunnel vision, that got me to that goal. But I was getting burnt out really mentally, by the time, even before I got injured, I was asking myself, do you want to do this again? Because now it's starting to feel like a chore, like a job. And the passion is burning out. I mean, not surprising really, for like more than 10 years, I hardly went out. I didn't socialize. I didn't do anything. This is what I did, right? I trained, I ate, I slept, and on repeat. So it was very extreme. I was getting burnt out mentally, and then I got the injury, which anyway put the nail in the coffin as far as competing. So I went from this very extreme focus, all my life focused on this one goal, and then it was gone. It was gone. And then you feel totally lost because you don't have this goal. So I went through that period of like depression and so on. It was a very nasty period the way I was feeling. And then I went a little bit more to another extreme. Well, like shit, I haven't been doing anything. Now I'm gonna live life and I'm gonna go loco and I'm gonna party and I'm gonna, I was divorced, I was single. I was on the party scene and dating different girls. All this stuff was, I swing from one extreme to the other, and then it's kind of like the pendulum has settled now, right in the middle, where I feel my life is balanced and my thoughts are more balanced, and so on. So that's kind of where I got to now, and I think everything that I've done has helped me get to that place. The psychedelics, the meditation, the yoga. I'm doing breathing exercises as well now, which is great for your mind and for your immune system and so on. So I think I'm trying to be the best that I can be. Physically, I don't require super heavy training. That's not benefiting me now. It's going to irritate my injuries. So I need to be cardiovascular fit. I need to have mobility. I need to have flexibility and strong immune system and generally healthy. So that's the physical. And then I'm doing the mental work and the spiritual work and so on, and kind of tying it all together. I think that's the idea. And trying to constantly learn something. I'm not a believer in just standing still. So I'm always kind of reading and trying to learn something. If I find it interesting, I can absorb the information. If I don't, then it's I don't, you know.
You linked up a book, I think it might have been a year ago, and I remember I got it straight away. It's a cannabis book on spirituality. I can't remember, the name escapes me now, but I got a lot from reading that one as well. It was on your Instagram profile, I want to say a year ago. But has there been any other books or resources that have had a most positively impacted your life? In, as you said, you can't retain the information unless you're interested in it. Is there any other books or resources that have helped you over the last 12, 18, 24 months?
Well, I don't know about the time period, but people can look into this guy as far as health and nutrition. I found very fascinating was a guy called Dr. Sebi. Sebi, I don't know how you pronounce it. S-E-B-I. Fascinating guy that was curing many people of serious diseases just with, basically with nutrition, with fasting, with herbs, with alkaline diet and so on. And at some point he took an ad out in the New York Post claiming cure any disease, which people told him, don't do that, you're crazy, they're going to come after you. So they did, they took him to court, and cut a long story short, he proved in the court that he could, in fact, cure. He was curing HIV patients that were positive and they were becoming negative, cancer patients, heart disease, all the serious diseases. And he died recently in very suspicious sort of circumstances, so as a lot of natural doctors tend to do. So I found that guy fascinating. The China Study is another very interesting book on diet and how it affects health. So from all these prompted me to switch to a more plant-based diet. I don't say to people, hey, I'm vegan or something like that. I don't like to put a label on it, but a majority of my food now comes from plants. I don't eat meats. I don't eat chicken. Have occasionally some fish or eggs, but it's not a lot. So that's the diet I'm following now because I believe that's the best thing for my health. And totally different to my bodybuilding diet, but then I have different goals. The diet that may be absolutely the best thing for your health may not be the best thing for your athletic career. Maybe they're two different things, and I don't have a definite answer to that right now. But anyway, I'm eating for what I feel I need now, what's going to benefit me the most now.
Do you practice fasting as well?
I do intermittent fasting. So most days I don't eat until like about 2 o'clock. I just kind of skip breakfast. And I have done a 1 or 2 day fast occasionally, but it's not something I've done regularly yet. But yeah, intermittent fasting I do most of the time. I've been doing that. And when you go to the ayahuasca camp, by the way, you're kind of intermittent fasting because you have only 2 meals during the day. So I always lose a bit of weight while I'm there. But yeah, that's what I'm on. I'm mostly intermittent fasting and kind of mainly plant-based.
You just got another 10% of people there. They're like, we're going to lose weight on the ayahuasca camp.
it's a pretty intense experience. You're up most of the night. You don't sleep a lot and you're not eating a lot. And it's all, you know, again, it's all organic. There's no salt. That's a big thing. You cut out the salt when you go to ayahuasca. And, of course, if you're in a hot place and you're sweating a lot, you do lose the weight. But, you know, it's just water weight. You put it back on afterwards.
Yeah, it's such an interesting way that the body responds to it. It's something
like there's a whole approach to it, to doing ayahuasca. It's not something you just ball up and do it. You have to prepare, especially with the diet, actually not allowed any sexual activity for a couple of weeks before and afterwards and so on. So that's probably the toughest thing.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's maybe not a lockdown for people right now. They're like, right, we're getting used to it.
It's strange what you miss because yeah, I'm a regular weed smoker. You've got to cut that out as well, and alcohol and coffee and all this stuff, which I don't indulge in that much. But living in Spain, I do like a cold beer, and it's funny. Usually that's the thing I miss the most, I guess because it's hot there as well, and just kicks in that, oh, I want a beer feeling. And there's a preparation for ayahuasca that goes into it so that you get the most out of it.
And would I be right in saying, Dorian, that if somebody was to sign up for, say, Saltero, that they would get all the information on how they were to prepare for it beforehand?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They got a whole team. Not only before you go there, and while you're there, but most importantly after you go there as well, because it's a big it's a big kind of experience and that you go through, and you'll probably have a lot of questions even ongoing afterwards. It's kind of, you're still kind of going through stuff and reviewing what you were, I don't know if the right word, told, or what you experienced, or what you heard, or what you saw, and what you went through. So sometimes you need somebody to talk to and guide you through that. So they do a great job with that as well, aftercare.
Dorian, what do you think are the biggest misconceptions around psychedelics, either that you had yourself or that you see with people? Just to kind of, as someone that's very curious in this topic, obviously myself, what were the biggest misconceptions you had around it, or what?
There's the ridiculous. I don't know where these stories get started. You know, there's a great American comedian. I'm trying to think of his name. I can't think of his name now, but anyway, he's like, he was a great comedian, and he was into psychedelics himself, and he's like, you know, we've all heard this story about the guy that took acid, and then he decided to, you know, jump out of the window because he thought he could fly. I mean, you know, it's one of those things, like urban myth, that never happened, it wouldn't happen. It's like, what a fucking idiot. Why didn't he start from the ground and start flapping his wings and see if he could take off? So yeah, there's so many misconceptions out there, and I think it's important to do it in a controlled setting. Like if you're going to take a psychedelic in a nightclub or a party with tons of people in there, all kind of energies flying around, you could have a bad experience for sure, because you're going to be affected by what's around you. That's why there's a real special setting when they do psychedelics, is in a ceremonial fashion. You're in the building that's just for that, and it's been prepared, you know, it's been blessed, it's been cleared the energy, and you're in there with the shamans and the helpers, and just my group is a maximum of 20 people that take part. You've got the people, experienced helpers there, that if you are having what would be perceived to be at the time a negative experience, maybe it's scary, or maybe you're reliving something and it's not pleasant, or whatever it's going on, it might seem negative at the time, but there's always a reason why everything's happening. And sometimes we see things and have to face things that are not pleasant, or really wouldn't choose to do that, but it's for your benefit. So you need to do it in a controlled environment with the right people. It's very, very important, not something to be messing about with. Or you could have a bad experience and it's not fun. There is no real, you know, there's no, you can't overdose or anything like that, like, you know. So there's no real danger, but psychologically there could be a danger. So make sure you're doing it in a controlled environment.
Yeah, that's great advice. And as someone that hasn't had an experience yet, but is very interested in it, there's some resources that I've read, the Psychedelic Explorer's Guide, which documented all those early 60s LSD studies, and particularly Michael Pollan's The New Science of the Mind, I think is a very accessible resource on psychedelics for anybody that wants to look into that further. That's probably one of my favorite ones as an introductory point. I'm curious, Dorian, because we've talked about psychedelics and balance and reflection, what does the word happiness mean to you?
Just it's just a feeling, right? It's an energy. And often we're in control of that. It's our own perceptions, our own thoughts that a lot of times that make us unhappy. Hey, am I happy all the time? Am I an expert on this? No, but you know, that's the human experience, right? Life is never always one thing, but I know it's kind of up to us how we react to life and the circumstances and so on. So really, deep down, we're in control of our happiness, I think.
I just have two more questions, Dorian, that I'd love to ask. And one is, if you could go back to when you were in the detention center, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give yourself?
Maybe I did do that. Who knows?
That's very true. Very, very outside of the box answer.
maybe I did do that. Because I always had a feeling like everything's going to be okay. That's what I would be saying. Like, listen, mate, you know, everything's going to be okay, and just follow your heart, follow your instincts, and something much bigger is waiting for you.
During those low points, Dorian, just to double back, because I'm very curious on this, because we've mentioned obviously the detention center, the wrong place, the wrong time, the low and the kind of the post-depression that came off the back of retiring from bodybuilding. Did you always have this undercurrent feeling that things were going to be okay or things were going to work out?
Yeah, but I mean, the younger you are, I think the more that feeling you have, I think when we get older, maybe we stress it a little bit more. So when I was younger, yeah, I didn't, I always felt like, I don't know. I always had this inner feeling that I was destined for something different from everybody else around me. And I didn't know what it was, but it was a very strong feeling. Like, I don't really fit in here. I don't fit in with the expectations of what people have around me and what they think their future is. I'm destined for something different. And it was a very strong feeling. I was just looking for that thing for what it was. And then when I hit the gym, then I knew that's what it was.
How did you continually follow that voice?
I just realized when I started training, and especially, you know, my early success and feedback of everybody that I was getting, obviously spurred me on. And I had faith in myself. And I really enjoyed what I was doing, enjoyed the discipline. I enjoyed having, like, I used to call it mastery over myself. So it's hurting in the gym. It's painful, and most people just want to give up, and I'm going to push through that. My body's telling me it wants to stop, but my will is going to say no. My body's telling me it's hungry, it's tired, it wants food, but I can't now because this is the diet that I'm on, this is what I got to do. So I'll override that feeling. And I think that builds on itself. You know, the confidence in yourself that you can overcome these things. And the opposite is also true. If you have a challenge and you give up easily, you know, all these things can become a habit, right? So if you can discipline yourself to overcome things, then it'll be easier next time. Again, it's kind of a, you know, we fall into these habits, right?
I think that mastery over yourself, I absolutely love that line. I'm going to be feeding that into the show notes on the description.
Mastery over oneself, yeah. Yeah, so there was always a bigger mental / spiritual side to my training and my feeling than when I was training. It was another aspect to this whole thing that appealed to me. A lot of people, they just want the result, right? They want a nice physique, and they're prepared to do some work for that. But I actually really thrived on that, and enjoyed seeing how far I could push myself and how disciplined I could be. And again, that builds on itself. You get, once you can do it once, you can do it twice. It builds on itself. People used to be like almost terrified to come and train with me because they knew what was going to go on. I mean, I used to scare myself. Like every day was leg day. Every day was like a love-hate thing because I knew what I did last time and I knew how absolutely exhausting it was to go to that limit that I could push myself to. And then I got to do it again today. Actually, today I got to try to do more than last time. So I used to have butterflies in my stomach going to the gym myself. So I don't know how the other guys felt that were coming to train with me. Well, I do because they told me, but
I can only imagine. It reminds me so much of the quote from the Samurai Warrior in the Book of Five Rings, that once you see greatness in one thing, you see it in all. And I can see that's how you are clearly with bodybuilding, and now it's transitioned over into business and into other areas of your life. Which just leads me on to my last question, Dorian. What are you most excited about right now?
I'm excited about getting out of this fucking house and going to a gym when they're open and spending some time with some other human beings from less than 6 foot distance. right now. To be honest, that's what I'm looking forward to.
I love it. It's focusing on the little things. And macro-wise, anything outside of the micro when this lockdown lifts, anything macro-wise that you're super excited about, or is all the focus on the lockdown at the minute and getting out of that?
Right now, I mean, things are so uncertain that I think everyone's a little bit focused on that. And, you know, my passion now is, like, how I see it is that I was given a platform or I made a platform. It doesn't matter. I have a platform. People listen to me because I'm Dorian Yates and I won 6 Mr. Olympias. So I want to try to use that platform in a positive way and help people on their journey. And I have been through, let's call it mental health problems myself, suffering from depression and anxiety and not knowing where to turn or who to talk to or, you know, what is this and is it a weakness? It's like, so I think my goal now is to try to like help people with their journey, with their spiritual journey and their mental journey. And that's why I do the camp at Soltara. That's one thing I'm doing now. And I'm hoping in the future that I'll be going more down that road. Even with my nutrition company, we have Shadowline. Which is the bodybuilding line, if you like, or the, you know, the sports nutrition line. But we're developing a line, and it's still going on while this downtime from the gym is there and the lockdown. So hopefully, when things open up, it will be complete, and I'll be able to present it. But it's a new line that we've got called Renew, which is kind of like, you know, I renewed myself or evolved or whatever you want to call it. And this is more like a health and wellness line. So I've got the vegan protein in there, which I use myself. We've got an immunity product, which is very apt at the moment. That's what people should be more concerned with about, just strengthening their immune system. And we wouldn't have to be all hiding from each other. We've got CBD products as well that we're developing. So it's more... If you see Dorian Yates as being two separate people, the bodybuilder Dorian Yates and the Dorian Yates now, then the two kind of lines that I'll have kind of reflect that, I think.
And as someone that's been a long-term user of your bodybuilding line back when I used to compete, I am very excited about the wellness line now because I've made that similar transition from a different focus, nowhere near the extreme or the levels that you were at, but just from a mini version, a lifestyle version. And Dorian, I just want to acknowledge you for everything that you put out there into the universe and put out there online. As somebody that originally was a Dorian Yates bodybuilding fan and just would idolize your physique as a teenager in the bodybuilding gyms. Now I get so much from your content on going from extreme personality to balance and talking about mental health issues and all your spiritual journeys. So I've been with you on this journey. You know, you might not have known it, and I'm sure there's so many people that are similar that follow your content and have gone on the journey with you and have never got a chance publicly to acknowledge it. So I want to do that now as someone that's got the benefit all the way down in different shapes and forms. And I just want to acknowledge you and say thank you for that. And Dorian, can you tell everybody listening where is the best place for them to connect with you? And I will link everything for DY Nutrition, the supplement line, the new line when it's out in the show notes. Right. I'll update it when it comes, the academy, the whole lot. But where is the best place for people to reach out to you?
Well, first of all, thanks, Brian, for saying that. And thanks to all the people that have come to speak to me personally or send me messages that have benefited from what I'm putting out there, because that's why I'm doing it. And the fact that you guys are coming back and telling me that you benefited from it encourages me to do it more, because sometimes when you speak out about things that can make people feel uncomfortable, you do get the negative pushback as well. Some people don't like it because you've disturbed their picture or their version of reality, and people don't like that. So thanks for everybody that's coming back, the positive feedback. I mean, I got some very emotional meetings when I've been at expos and so on, and appearances. I've got people coming up, and several people coming up to me and just holding my hand and saying, listen, man, you don't know, but you actually saved my life with what you said or what you did. And I mean, this is, to hear this is incredible feedback. So just encourage me to keep doing what I'm doing. And as far as contacting me, you can, I'm on Instagram, the Dorian Yates on Instagram. So you can direct message me through there. You can go to DY Nutrition website. You can message through there. I'm not on Facebook too much, but so Instagram is probably the easiest way to get in touch with me.
And for everybody listening, I will link that in the show notes on the description. You can click on through. And I highly recommend you go follow Dorian, check out his products, check out everything we talked about today. I'm going to be checking out Saltero myself at the end of this podcast. Dorian, thank you so much again.
All right. Oh, one thing, Brian, we forgot to mention is something I'm working on also at the moment is DY Academy, which is going to be a platform where people can get kind of customized advice from me, training and nutrition and supplementation and so on. I've got a lot of people messaging me all the time wanting to get advice directly from me. So we're working on that now. And again, you know, maybe this downtime lets me get these projects finished, the Renew line and the DY Academy, and that will all be ready to rock and roll when we're let off house arrest and able to go back to the gym.
And that beta website for everybody listening is already up and running. I don't think it's fully operational just yet, but I will link it in the show.
Not operational yet, but anyway, if you get on the Instagram, anything I'm doing is always announced on there. Any seminars I'm doing, any camps, anything new, that's the best place to get it. So if you join on the Instagram, then you're going to get all that info.
Fantastic. Dorian, thank you so much. Keep doing what you're doing.
All right, Brian. Thanks a lot, mate. Cheers.
There we go. The legendary, the one and the only Dorian Yates on Bodybuilding Psychedelics and the Underdog Mindset. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I enjoyed recording it. If you did, be sure to take a screenshot of it and post it on your Instagram story and tag me, Brian_Keen_Fitness, and Dorian's page, The Dorian Yates, and let us know what you thought. And that's everything from this week. Stay tuned for next week's episode with Dr. Eamon, who was recently featured on Miley Cyrus's Instagram page. That's an interesting one. And we talk about all things anxiety, mental health, and making sure that you have the post-traumatic growth off the back and off the coming out of COVID-19 and this current pandemic and quarantine. So stay tuned for that. Catch you all next week.